Oh, we're ready for a great week here on The Commute with Carlson. However, I have ordered Philip J. Vandervoort III out of the building for the next 4 days.
That's what's missing. It just felt different coming in this morning, like it's going to be a weird Monday. I guess there's no traffic issue. I couldn't get John Nelson on online here, so everybody just be careful. A lot of aggressive drivers, I told John.
Yes, and they were all aiming at Mark Christopher.
I didn't realize there's 90-mile-per-hour speed limit on the waterfront between the Coast Guard building, John, up to the Great Wheel, but man, and something about red lights, I guess you only stop if you want to.
Well, they're optional in Seattle, as you know. I mean, what's the penalty if you ignore them, right? Anyway, welcome everyone to the radio program record, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Yes, Philip J. Vandervoort III is out of the building until Thursday. And in is Big Mike.
Look at you.
Yeah, good morning, folks. How are we doing?
All right. Good to see you. You receive as Brian Calvert from our sister station, KNWN, was saying, the high honor of producing the morning show here on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
A fine job at that, too. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thank you, friends. I just know it's very, very dark in the morning. I didn't realize that we were in the nighttime season.
Well, yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there. You know, we're 2 months past the summer equinox. Yeah. So.
About 14 minutes. We'll get the light going here and bring up a day.
But did you guys catch, but I have want to let everyone know, and complaints are way down by the way. I got tired of ABC News, doing our top of the hour news reports because I would be ready to do my morning monologue and I would have to fact check ABC News for either getting it factually wrong or presenting the story wildly out of context. And so, I'm not alone. We were hearing this complaint steadily from listeners who, by the way, tend to be more informed and more interested in politics, more informed about politics, more interested in politics than most people who listen to the radio. Okay, and it reached the point where I said, "Can we fire ABC News? Can we get a better newscast in here?" Have you noticed you have not heard, quote, ABC News at the top of the hour? This was a quiet opening. And we just wanted to see if people would notice. The complaints are way down. The news is much more even-handed. The news is a much more above board. It's not conservative in its slant. It's just more down the middle, which is what news is supposed to be, just telling you what happened, where and when.
That's why they got you to give us the analysis.
Yeah, and I think that people are just tired of the news always coming with political baggage attached to it. And so we took some action here at KVI, and we hope you are enjoying our new newscast that is free and liberated from the shackles of ABC's news slant.
Liberated, but not liberal.
No.
That's good one, Mike.
Anyway, we always want to hear what you have to say, so you can call us or text us, same number, 206-421-5757. That is 206-421-5757.
I know you got a lot on the plate here, John. I just got to say, boy, this new manager we have with the Mariners, new coach for the Seahawks, we're doing some good things.
Yes. Well, when
a lot of people in town for the games over the weekend, too.
What you were doing wasn't quite working, then getting new people around is a pretty good idea.
Yeah, this Dan Wilson guy and this Edgar guy, the new hitting coach.
Edgar guy, yes. Mr. Mariner.
Yeah, what year is it? Am I time traveling? What's Ichiro up to?
Well, hey, when Dan Wilson was behind the plate and Edgar Martinez was up to bat, I recall us winning a whole lot of games. And since they can't do what they were doing back then today, at least we can bring them forward in different roles. Yeah.
I have a framed photo in my office of the 2001 Mariners All-Star team, the year we won 116 games, yes. Dominated the All-Star game. And I was just looking at it, I'm like, what's Mike Cameron up to? What's John Olerud up to? It's like, let's bring all those guys back. Let's party like it's 2001.
Anyway, We now, I think, have an outside chance of making the playoffs. Outside chance of making the playoffs. Beat San Francisco, won that series. We had been losing series after series, so we turned it around there. And let's hope for the best, because we're down. You know, baseball seasons last 162 games, and we're down to our last, what, 32, 33 games?
Yeah, something like that, too. And way to go, we got it! Little League World Series title game, Lake Mary, Florida, who beat Puyallup, you know, South Hill Puyallup in their opener, beats Taiwan.
Yes.
Just a great
The team that beat Puyallup
on the opener, yeah.
And South Hill team. Ended up winning the Little League World Series, besting Taiwan in extra innings.
2-1, John. Niall, I can't wait till these kids grow up. Anxious to see where they end up in baseball, of course.
It is 9 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the commute with Carlson. Okay, big news over the weekend. Actually started on Friday after we were off the air. Huge rally in Arizona, the day after the Democrats finished their convention, Donald Trump unveils Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Bobby Kennedy Jr. has dropped his campaign for president, will be endorsing Donald Trump, has endorsed Donald Trump. Let's take you back to Arizona on Friday afternoon.
He's a very low-key person, but he's highly respected. He is a great person. I've known him for so long. For the past 16 months, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Well, a lot of Foo Fighters there, a lot of Foo Fighters. But no, it was an extended
ovation. Thank
you, Dave
Grohl. Okay, and then Bobby makes the pitch for Trump.
And don't you want a president who's going to protect America's freedoms? And who is going to protect us against totalitarianism. And I want to ask you again, don't you want a safe environment for your children? Don't you want to know that the food that you're feeding them is not filled with chemicals that are going to give them cancer and chronic disease? And don't you want a president that's going to make America healthy again?
Oh, okay, healthy and safe and all that good stuff. All right, so what does this mean? A couple of different observations. First of all, this is completely freaking out the Kennedy family and the Democratic Party. Bobby Kennedy had been drawing double digits, as high as 15% in polls as a third party candidate when Joe Biden was in the race. And when Joe Biden went bye-bye, or basically was told to go bye-bye, his numbers started dropping. Now, they were still up there in the 4-5% range. And keep in mind, Donald Trump lost this election in a handful of swing states by, let's see, he lost Arizona by 10,000 votes, 11,000 votes. He lost Georgia by 12,000 votes. I mean, these were very close races, and it's all about the Electoral College. So what kind of difference can Bobby Kennedy make? Well, my guess is that some of the people who were going to vote for Bobby Kennedy, if he was no longer running, would probably not vote. You know, some of them are just, hey, I know what I want, and it ain't Trump, and it ain't Kamala, it ain't Biden. Okay. But of the people who are voting, I'm guessing 2-1, they're going to be voting for Trump, especially with Bobby Kennedy campaigning for him. Okay, he's not just making a statement and going away. He's a part now of the Trump campaign. If Donald Trump, let's say, gets an extra 1 to 1.5% of the vote because of Bobby Kennedy, 1 to 1.5% of the vote, additional votes because of Bobby Kennedy, all of a sudden, these really close races become really close in Trump's favor. And the Democrats know this, which is, of course, why they are demonizing Bobby Kennedy Jr. Here is a statement released by five of his relatives, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, Courtney Kennedy, Carrie Kennedy, Chris Kennedy, Rory Kennedy. Okay, here's what they had to say. We want an America filled with hope and bound together by a shared vision of a brighter future, a future defined by individual freedom, economic promise, and national pride. We believe in Harris, meaning Kamala Harris, and Walz, meaning Tim Walz. Our brother Bobby's decision to endorse Trump today is a betrayal of the values that our father and our family hold most dear. It is a sad ending to a sad story. Close quote. Okay. First of all, this is high irony. The Kennedy family stuck together to support Ted Kennedy when he drove a car off a bridge and drowned a girl back in 1969 in Chappaquiddick. But when one of the family relatives supports a Republican for Congress, that's just going over the line. That's completely out of character. What do you think you're doing? That's extreme.
So. Yeah, drowning ladies, totally okay. Endorsing Trump, not okay. Got it.
It's not that it's okay. It's just that the family, they could say, well, we see this differently from our brother. Look, here's the other problem with the Kennedy family is how far they have drifted toward the political left. Okay, Jack Kennedy was a foreign policy conservative. He's a strong anti-communist. Jack Kennedy was a believer in free market capitalism. Okay, John F. Kennedy cut taxes. They cut taxes on the highest income earners in order to get the economy moving again. Remember that phrase, a rising tide lifts all boats? That was penned by his speechwriter, a guy named Ted Sorensen, very gifted writer, brilliant speech. He wrote Kennedy's inaugural address as well, and Ghost wrote his best-selling book, but we don't have time to get into that. Anyway, a rising tide lifts all boats was the justification for lowering the tax rate on the wealthiest income earners. I think it was like 90%, and Kennedy brought it down to 70%. And then Ronald Reagan brought it down further still from 70% to 50%, and then lower in the mid-80s with the tax tax reform plan. But here's the thing. Jack Kennedy worked productively with Republicans. Does that strike you as the Kennedy family today? He was a conservative on foreign policy. Is that the Kennedy family? He was a conservative, kind of like a Wall Street Republican, basically, when it came to economic policy. Is that the Kennedy family? No. And Bobby Kennedy had a more liberal image because he opposed the war in Vietnam, but he was also very much a patriot. And he also was also a supporter of colorblind equality when it came to civil rights. And he was a supporter of free market capitalism. He thought, free enterprise was the ticket to opportunity and the American dream. So, sure, they held liberal positions as well. They were far more, pro-labor than Republican presidents in the past. But the bottom line is it's the Kennedy family that has been kind of the liberal elite, the kind of people who preside over college campuses that go to hell and do nothing to fight back or push back on the far left. Show me anyone in the Kennedy family who has pushed back on the far left, because John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy were not far left at all. No one in today's Kennedy family. Bobby Kennedy is not committing heresy against Jack and Bobby. Bobby Kennedy Jr. is committing heresy against where the Kennedy family has drifted in recent years, which is why it doesn't really have that much political oomph anymore. But Bobby Kennedy Jr. Does have, as I said, enough sway to probably push up Donald Trump's vote totals 1 to 1.5%. And in a very close election, and it'll be a close election, probably, that matters.
So you had, what, 5 Kennedy family members that were not
Yeah, and several others have
Are they the older ones or the younger ones? No. I'm just curious, large family.
This is the older okay. generation. The Kennedys who are basically the siblings and cousins of Bobby Kennedy Jr. It is 21 minutes after 6. Oh, my goodness. Let's see if Big Mike can deliver a stellar social media moment when we come back here as the Commute with Carlson continues at 6:21. Good morning. 26, almost 27 minutes now after 6 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. Let's hear what Big Mike has to tell us about social media right now. What's going on in the social media world?
Well, we were in a baseball frame of mind to start off the show, and this was too zany for me to resist. The Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep sponsored by our friends at Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I'm going to tell you about the Major League Baseball player who will play on 2 teams in 1 game, thus making history.
Was it a doubleheader?
Kind of. But this
oh, that's cool.
This is zany. This from WKRC in Boston. Due to his bizarre set of circumstances, a player will soon become the first player to play for both teams in the same game. The Blue Jays and the Red Sox were playing a game at Fenway Park in Boston back on June 26, back in June, when inclement weather forced the game to be postponed.
Okay.
At the time of the postponement, catcher Danny Jensen was a member of the Blue Jays, but just over a month later, on July 27th, Jensen was traded. Could you guess which team? The Red Sox. The game that began on June 26th.
Well, they have to finish the game.
Yeah, so it's been 2 months. The game isn't even done. The game is scheduled to conclude tonight, Monday, August 26th, but with one small difference. Jansen will still be on the diamond. He's the catcher, but he'll be batting for the other team.
Oh, my Lord.
That's
so
wild.
One game, wow. 2 games, 1 player, 2 teams. That's just too crazy for me.
I mean, why wouldn't they just bench him? I mean, if they're going to start him in the game, why did they trade him? Why would you trade a starter?
Right. That's a great question. And I don't know anything about this guy. I don't know if he's any good or.
Well,
but
starting, it must be pretty good.
Yeah. I would have
Red Sox wanted him. He's got to be pretty good.
So I might have to check this out. This seems
funny.
History in the making. And that's your social media sweep for this hour.
So he will start the game in a Blue Jays uniform. He'll be behind the plate trying to help the pitcher strike out the Red Sox players that he will join as a teammate a few minutes later when they have a full 9-inning game, rather, you know, after they finish the game that was called on the count of rain.
That's my understanding.
Oh, wow.
Craziness.
And it's coming up here, 6:30, the John Carlson Show. Hey, are you looking to buy a home? There is a taxpayer finance group that will be offering $30,000 to new home buyers, help them make a down payment if you're a non-citizen. Being a U.S. citizen is a disqualifier from this taxpayer-subsidized program. We'll have more details about that with my buddy Lars Larson towards the top of the hour. It's the Commute with Carlson. Glad you're here. All righty. I know a lot of people focused on what's happening in the presidential race here at home and, you know, a lot of local issues as well. But let's spend a couple of moments and focus on what has changed in the Middle East in just the last 24 hours. Are you hearing this? The Israeli Defense Forces have shot down nearly 6,000 rockets and drones that not the Hamas terrorists down south, but the Hezbollah terrorists up north, that they were preparing to fire and rain down on Israel. So just to quickly sketch out the map for you, Israel is facing a terrorist threat from Hamas, which runs Gaza and is now on the run because of the Israeli Defense Forces. And then up north, over the border in Lebanon, you have Hezbollah terrorists who are even better armed than Hamas. Now, who's arming Hezbollah? The same people who are arming Hamas in Gaza, the Iranian. In a sense, what's really going on is Israel is under siege by Iran that is running a proxy war. A proxy means someone who is doing your dirty work for you. And so Iran, which wants to form an Islamic crescent throughout the Middle East. Remember, they're not Arab, okay? Iran, those are Persian, and they are not Sunni Muslims. They are a different variety of Muslim. They are Shia Muslims. The two do not get along, Shia and Sunni. And we don't even want to get close to that hornet's nest. But Arab Muslim nations like Saudi Arabia are fearful, with good reason, of Iran, especially if Iran gets a nuclear weapon. People think if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, they want to use it on the United States. No, 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 no. What they want to do with a nuclear weapon is intimidate the Arab Muslim nations that don't have a nuke. So basically, Iran getting a nuclear weapon would cause an arms race in the Middle East. Probably the last place on Earth we want to see an arms race. So Israel has struck back at Iran from time to time, going after its nuclear program. They took out the political leader of Hamas in Iran. He was staying in Iran, visiting Iran. They found out where he was going to stay, and with a pinpoint precision strike, they took him out, basically planted a bomb in his bed. And so now Israel, everyone's focused on Hamas. When you heard Kamala Harris, or if you didn't hear, that's okay, I listened for you. Kamala Harris giving her acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention, she referred to Hamas and Israel. She didn't mention Hezbollah. And as I said, Hezbollah is actually better funded. So the Israeli Air Force launched, are you ready for this? 100 fighter jets, not eight, you know, not a dozen, approximately 100 fighter jets struck more than 40 launch areas north of Israel in southern Lebanon, where Hezbollah had been preparing to launch these rockets and drones at Israel. Israel took them out, destroyed them on the ground. Some of those launchers would have actually reached central Israel. The attack from Hezbollah had been promised. They're still furious that their most senior military commander was taken out, basically the equivalent of their defense secretary. So in the 10 months since Hamas struck Israel, remember they invaded Israel from Gaza to the southwest of Israel, and they killed and in many cases hideously raped and tortured 1,200 people and then took 250 hostages. While they did that, Hezbollah said, this is our green light. So they started firing more than 6,700 rockets, missiles, and explosive drones at Israeli communities from the north, which isn't getting much attention. But while Israel's had its hands full liquidating Hamas, which is exactly what they need to do, I think they should kill their entire political command and their entire military command. Hezbollah up north has been raining down rockets and missiles. Most of them have been caught by Israel's Iron Dome defense system that basically knocks down these rockets and missiles as they're entering Israeli airspace. According to Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister. The IDF has been taking strong action to foil threats. It's eliminated thousands of rockets aimed at northern Israel, thwarting many other threats, taking very strong actions defensively and offensively. Israel continued pounding Hezbollah positions throughout southern Lebanon yesterday morning after the first wave of airstrikes were completed. So this is, you talk about a country with its hands full. This is a nation that is militarily fighting a war against barbarians, basically. Hamas, which says in its own charter, which is the equivalent of a national constitution, their own charter calls for the extinction of Israel. So Israel is fighting them and doing a good job. And if we leave them alone, they would have been done with that job by now. And then they're dealing with Hezbollah up north, and they've also struck the Houthi rebels in Yemen, which is further to the southeast of Israel, and they're trying to close down commercial shipping on the Red Sea. These are all of these people, again, are the equivalent of al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda were the Muslim extremists, Arab Muslim extremists who attacked us on 9/11. They are the equivalent of ISIS. They have the same view that al-Qaeda and ISIS have, which is that Israel should be extinct and Israel's homeland should be completely dominated by Muslims who will govern according to Sharia, which is Islamic law, and is very repressive. They mandate every facet of your life be governed by the state to make sure it's in accordance with Sharia doctrine. And they are merciless and vicious toward anyone, including Muslims, who aren't with the program, who think that that's extreme, who think that that goes too far. So Israel's not going to lose this, but that's what's going on right now. And again, the best thing we can do is let Israel have at them and give them whatever aid they need, because only by striking down, throttling the extremists will the more moderate Muslims who do acknowledge Israel has a right to exist, only then will they feel comfortable raising their heads and pushing back. Right now, they're just completely, totally intimidated. It is coming up here on 47 minutes after 6 o'clock, 13 minutes to 7 o'clock. Going to check in with our buddy Lars Larson to ask why this program in Oregon, which uses taxpayer money to help people make a down payment on a home, is not open to U.S. citizens. So they're using citizens' money to pay for the program. Again, just one more sign of what is way, way wrong going on in this country right now. Lars Larson right around the corner on The Commute with Carlson. Good morning. We're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 8 minutes to 7 o'clock. Little extra time to chat with our go-to guy, our noon to three host, Lars Larson, who, of course, broadcasts not just a show that's heard throughout the Puget Sound region, but a regional show heard throughout the Pacific Northwest. Good morning, Lars.
Good morning, John. I hope the weekend treated you well.
It treated me reasonably well, reasonably well. Now, the reason I wanted to talk to you is that you've been on top of this story that other media outlets are now catching on to, that there is a taxpayer-financed organization that is offering $30,000, up to $30,000 to help people make a down payment on a new home. And you know, frequently that's one of the, especially for first-time home buyers, young couples, that's the big obstacle. So they got $30,000, but there are criteria. There are certain qualifications you have to meet. And one of them is that you cannot be an American citizen.
Citizens need not apply. Might as well be the sign hanging in the window at Hacienda Community Development Corporation. Now, that is a private NGO, but where does it get its money? From a state agency called Business Oregon, which is, you know, it's one of these crazy Democrat ideas. I mean, we've got a Democrat supermajority in the House, the Senate, we've got all Democrat state elected officials in the state of Oregon. And what they do? They gave Hacienda a giant pile of money and said, you may give this out, not as loans, but as grants, meaning it's a gift. And you may take this money and give it to people to buy homes only if they are not American citizens.
Now, here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, Lars. It's not just green card holders and recent immigrants, legal immigrants in the United States. You can be in the country illegally.
Yes.
And
you may
get
be an illegal alien.
Down payment assistance, but not if you're a citizen.
So you have citizens and green card holders who are paying the taxes to fund this thing. You have specifically non-citizens, both illegal and legal, who will receive the money. And I had Friday a call from a gentleman who said, well, these illegal aliens, they work crap jobs. They aren't buying houses. I said, you are not informed. Mm-hmm. Illegal aliens work in jobs in construction, making $30, $35 an hour. They drive truck. They do a lot of things, and they are doing the jobs illegally, and they make good money. They make a kind of money that buy a house
with. I want to point out also, this isn't just a state program, because these people who get these grants work in concert with federal officials from the Housing and Urban Development Department.
Yeah, and the thing is, John, what do we all understand about discrimination law, federal, state? It says you may not discriminate in anything, housing, employment, accommodations, government programs, based on race, religion, national origin. Well, you're specifically saying this is only open to people of a foreign national origin. As you said, some will be green card holders, but some, and we now have 10 or 12 million more, will be illegal aliens. Americans are paying. Americans are not eligible.
Again, it's just one more example of what is going so wrong in this country right now. You never want to miss Lars every day of the work week from noon to 3. When we come back, hour number 2 of The Commute. J.D. Vance is speaking to the press, even if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are not. We'll tell you what he had to say. 3.5 minutes now after 7 o'clock. Good morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Man, we've had a robust, quick-moving first hour of the show. Let's just keep it going. Lisa, my wife Lisa was supposed to be heading to Fairbanks, Alaska for work yesterday. She works in marketing for Alaska Airlines, and she was supposed to be headed up north sometime late yesterday morning. And so I'm out on two wheels enjoying the Saturday that I couldn't enjoy because it was absolutely soaking wet most of the day. Dried up, got warm, so I went out for a ride, and I come back, and in the afternoon, she's still home. I said, honey, I thought you were supposed to catch a flight to Fairbanks. She said, SeaTac is a nightmare right now. Turns out she wasn't alone, and now we know why.
They don't believe any critical passenger information was leaked. Ticketing systems, especially for international travelers, were heavily impacted, with workers having to manually enter everyone's information in order to check them in for their flights.
The fact that they have to like enter everything manually as well, we have to like, you know, it'll probably be at least another 30, 45 minutes, so it's pretty unfortunate.
So I have my two bags and my backpack, but I'm a little nervous. My first flight, I'm trying to get there early, not late.
Officials are asking travelers to continue checking in with your airline for travel information. Use airline apps to get your boarding pass and bag tags and allow extra time to get to your gate. Right now, there's no timeline for when things could be resolved.
Okay, and she eventually got out last night at like 7 o'clock at night. You know, flights had been canceled, others rescheduled. Mark, what's the latest?
Yeah, we have about 300 plane flights that were delayed Saturday as a start, and then like 6 cancellations. Still have an issue, John. They're saying even baggage sorting is a challenge right now if you get to SeaTac. A lot of the reader boards there to tell you all the flights information when you're walking through the concourse, they're all dark.
So it's basically SeaTac 1967.
Yeah, and this also affected Port of Seattle with a lot of maritime phones, which we use out here with all the traffic, and today will be a busy day for a lot of these container ships coming in. So, yeah, it's a nightmare. It's got a way to go. Yeah, you hope they get it in time for Labor Day weekend, because they're already saying, again, record travel for people around the country beginning on Friday. So check with your air carrier before you you get the SeaTac, make sure everything's still a go.
And this was not, computer systems went down because of malfunction or a power outage. This was cyber espionage?
Yeah, they said there was something in the system, and they thought maybe a little software glitch or whatever. Further investigation, and apparently it's only SeaTac International and the Port of Seattle affected. They started seeing things that were saying cyber attack from somewhere. So it's a mess.
Was there a ransom?
Did not hear that.
Okay.
They might even still be going through and waiting for a response now that it's Monday, but that was quite a mess over the weekend.
All right. By the way, if you are listening and you're thinking, why SeaTac and the Port of Seattle? Well, the Port of Seattle runs SeaTac. So there's your connection there. And they're slowly, Mark Christopher, slowly getting back to normal?
They have some progress, but there's still a ways to go. Like I said, just the big thing is check with your air carrier online and see what's going on. Even check with the website there of SeaTac, and they'll have a whole layout of what's going okay. TSA said the line, security lines, all that, the robust system, they use those words, you're doing fine at that point. It's just a lot of information online that's a challenge, and maybe your flight.
Okay, so... Number one, check and see if your flight is on schedule. And number two, check and see what the traffic is like going into SeaTac. Mm-hmm. Best of luck. That's why it's happening.
And it's only SeaTac International and Port of Seattle. That's what's strange.
But, yeah, well, back when we were coming home from the Republican National Convention, there was a cyber attack, but it was aimed at airlines. So... airlines in cities, you know, Delta especially got hit hard, but so did a couple of others. And of course, when one major airline gets hit, it's going to impact all the others because everybody's scrambling to catch another flight on an airline that's actually working. So there, the cyber attack had a much more widespread impact because, again, it was affecting airlines, regardless of what airport they were flying in or out of, and this is apparently aimed at the airport.
Yeah, kind of like shutting it down. I think Mary Nahm, in a story that you aired a moment ago, she said it's not releasing private information about people, when it comes to charge account numbers and things like that. It's just something in the whole system's taken over.
All right.
I think regardless, we need to take the wisdom of one George Harrison. It's going to take patience and time. If you're traveling today, yes. Plan for both.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Generation X. All right. Let's talk about the generation that came after Big Mike. Let's talk about J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is 39 years of age. He has regularly appeared before the press. He doesn't dodge questions. He doesn't dodge interviews. Now, we are in day 36 since Kamala Harris became the anointed one. She still has not done a press conference. She still has not done an interview. And basically, her campaign's view is when she does interviews, when she answers questions, it doesn't help her, which frankly should tell you all you need to know about Kamala Harris. What the Democrats are trying to pull here, and I don't know if they can get away with it or not. They got away in 2020 with portraying Joe Biden as a moderate liberal who was going to bring the country together. Okay, instead, he was completely hostage to the progressive left. Just look at the border for examples of how that worked. And he has divided the country. Plus, especially with his speech at the Democratic National Convention last week, where they deliberately pushed him out of prime time by delaying the convention coverage, or by delaying the convention schedule. He's become mean and angry and ornery. He used to just be mean and ornery toward Donald Trump, the MAGA Republicans. Now he's mean and angry and ornery pretty much toward everyone. This did not get very much play in the media at all, but when Kamala Harris was delivering her remarks, she said some very nice, very kind things about Joe Biden in the opening 2 minutes of her speech. And then she was done with him. That was it. She made, you know, some perfunctory, complimentary comments about Joe Biden. And then it's off to give the speech. And he's in the rearview mirror. Now, the the Democrats got away with Joe in the basement strategy during the COVID election year of 2020. Now what they're trying to do is say that Kamala Harris is running against Donald Trump to create a new era in America. Okay, but she's not challenging an incumbent president. She is the incumbent. The Biden-Harris administration is responsible for, well, the results that you see. The high prices that they say are not, it's not on us. That's corporations. Yeah, they're gouging people. And, you know, the border. Oh, no, you can't blame the border on us. We tried to fix it. Donald Trump wouldn't let us. Their fix, by the way, was pathetic. And the Republicans who were part of that negotiation in the U.S. Senate should be ashamed of themselves. It basically would have set a tolerance policy, an official tolerance policy for illegal immigration into this country. He was so right to oppose it. But this is what the Democrats are trying to do. They're trying to see if they can run out the clock. They've got like almost 70 days, so it's not going to be easy for them to pull this off. They're going to try and claim that, A, she's not the incumbent, and B, she shouldn't have to do interviews. I've never seen this in a presidential campaign, folks, from either party. I've never seen a campaign where more than a month in fact, 5 weeks in, the Democratic nominee for president has not given any interviews, not to the Sunday shows, not to, you know, a one-on-one with Lester Holt, which, by the way, didn't go too well with Kamala the last time she did one. It was a disaster for her. Or a press conference. If they're afraid to face the press, it's because they're trying to hide stuff. And that's what's happening here. So here comes J.D. Vance. He'll answer their questions. But what's interesting about this is that the media, because Kamala Harris is hiding, instead of criticizing her for hiding, they think they need to present her case when they're interviewing Republicans. That's exactly what Kristen Welker was doing when she was interviewing J.D. Vance, Donald Trump's running mate, talking about the border. Again, listen to her. She's basically acting less like a reporter than a representative of the Biden campaign or of the Kamala Harris campaign.
So if you want to get control of the illegal immigration problem, you have to stop the bleeding. You have to stop so many people from coming here illegally in the first place. And that means undoing everything that Kamala Harris did practically on day one of the administration. You have to reimpose deportations. You have to stop catch and release. Stop granting asylum to every single person who comes in here and says that they need asylum. And stop granting mass parole. These policies are why we have the immigration crisis that we have. So I think focus on fixing the problem. Before we even fix the problem, we've got to stop the problem from getting worse.
Okay, now listen to her.
Whatever the real number is, it's way too high, right? It's
Here's what she says. She said she was put in charge of the root causes of immigration. She disagreed with J.D. Vance about the number of illegals. And he says, okay, well, regardless of what it is, and then he makes his point.
Millions upon millions of illegal immigrants that have come in just since Kamala Harris became the border czar a few years ago.
In charge of the root causes of migration.
Well, the root causes of migration, I would say, Kristen, is that Kamala Harris refuses to do her job as border czar.
Oh, good hit. But that is the problem. She refused to do her job. She never even had a conversation with the head of the Border Patrol. And by the way, let's make this clear. As border czar, which, of course, the press and the Kamala Harris campaign say, that was not her title. She was never the border czar. That wasn't her official title. People who are given official titles are often referred to in shorthand as, you know, the drug czar, the trade czar, the border czar. Okay, she had two responsibilities. Number one, get at the root causes of illegal immigration. And number two, stop the flow of illegal migration to the United States. Who said that those were her responsibilities? Joe Biden. Okay, so the media, instead of acknowledging, yeah, that was her two-tiered responsibility. That's what Joe Biden told the country her responsibilities were. They instead convey the Kamala Harris campaign's claim, she was just supposed to get at the root causes of illegal immigration. The whole getting at the root causes of illegal immigration was a complete charade. You know what the root cause of the illegal immigration explosion was in the Biden administration? Opening the damn gate, opening the border is your root cause. Letting people know if you reach the United States, we'll process you, then release you into the United States. There's your root cause. There's no mystery there. The whole thing about, I've got to go to Guatemala and interview people and find out what's going on, as if somehow they wouldn't be coming here if the gate was open. There must be some stronger root cause. That was just a distraction. And it's amazing that the media that it's supposed to be streetwise isn't calling her out on that and is pretending to go along with, oh, they're trying to get at the root cause. The root cause was opening the border. When you open the gate and say, all right, you can come in now, doesn't matter what the root cause is, people are going to stream in. The root cause is wanting a better life. The root cause is, hey, I can get a lot more money working here than I can back in Honduras or Guatemala or El Salvador. The root cause is, hey, I can make a bundle of money trafficking fentanyl or trafficking teenage girls. So that is your root cause. Opening the border, opening the gate and allowing people to flood in, which is exactly what they did. It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. When we return, we have Big Mike with the social media moment coming up here on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I believe these fellas are headed this way, Mark Christopher.
Yeah, coming in here in September to White River Amphitheater. Doobie Brothers, Michael McDonald will be there, and Tom Johnson as well, and Pat Simmons. It's going to be a lot of fun.
That's next month coming up here.
Yeah, like in a week, 2 weeks.
By the way, I've never seen a concert at White River.
It is a great venue.
Is it?
Think of the Gorge at George if you've never been there, or if you have been there over there on the Columbia River. It's a version of that minus the river. It's just a great venue, outdoor seating. You've got a grassy area as well, some VIP seating.
Beautiful.
Spoken like a man who has never left the White River Amphitheater after the concert is over.
One of the first MCs I was, and I was like, wow, this sounds cool. It's a great venue for a concert. Give it a try.
Yeah. All right there, Big Mike. Philip J. Vandervoort III has fled the premises for the next 4 days. It's all yours. What's going on in the social media world?
Well, the Twittosphere is all a flutter, a Twitter, if you will, about whether Donald Trump is going to cancel the upcoming debate on ABC. The Twitter 20, I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by our friends at Muckleshoot Casino and Resort. And I've seen a number of posts this morning on a variety of platforms talking about this upcoming debate on September 10th between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And one of the roadblocks apparently is over whether the microphone should be muted while the other candidate is speaking, very similar to the infamous disastrous debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump.
Yes, the mics should be muted. Donald Trump, you won that debate resoundingly. You drove Joe Biden out of the contest. The muted mics were a reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to read you a post from Donald Trump from his Truth Social platform. He posted this late last night. Quote, I watched ABC fake news this morning. It was Sunday morning. Both lightweight reporter Jonathan Clark's ridiculous and biased interview of Tom Cotton.
Jonathan Carl?
What did I say?
Clark.
Oh, and let me try this one more time. I watched ABC fake news this morning. Both lightweight reporter Jonathan Carl with a K question mark, Trump writes, a ridiculous and biased interview of Tom Cotton, who was fantastic, and their so-called panel of Trump haters. And I ask, why would I do the debate against Kamala Harris on that network? Will panelist Donna Brazile give the questions to the Marxist candidate like she did for crooked Hillary Clinton? Will Kamala's best friend who heads up ABC do likewise? Where is Liddy George Stephanopoulos hanging out now? Will he be involved? They've got a lot of questions to answer. Why did Harris turn down Fox, NBC, CBS, and even CNN? Stay tuned, he says with 3 exclamation points. And one of the videos that I see circulating the Twittosphere this morning is with regards to the microphones. Kamala wants them on, this from Twitter user Johnny MAGA, for the simple reason that she wants to hit Trump with the quote-unquote, excuse me, Donald, I'm speaking line. That's all she has. For context, this goes back to the debate between then Vice President candidate Kamala Harris and Mike Pence.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking. I'm speaking.
Be important if you said the truth. Joe Biden said twice in the debate.
So the point of contention there is folks that are anti-Team Kamala seem to think that she wants the mics on so that she could say, excuse me, Donna, I am speaking.
Yeah,
so that's well, kind of my take.
No, all she has are gimmicks.
Yes,
all she has are are zingers. That's what they're going to be focusing on because there's no time for her to bone up on substance. If she doesn't have it by now, she's not going to have it.
Right.
So and again, distractions, zingers, those are ways of trying to keep people from focusing on the central issues that you should be debating. Like, why are you saying on day one you'll do something when it's day 1,200 and something?
Right. You're in power. Do it now.
Why haven't you done it?
Right. So anyway, there's your social media sweep for this hour. I'll have more social media from socialists coming up in the next hour.
Looking forward to that. It's 7:30, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Well, just getting strange, John, this Monday real quick here. We had the cyber attack issue still at SeaTac. Now, as we look at these cruise ships out here taking people north to Alaska, Ketchikan right now with an evacuation because of this mudslide and the storms they've had?
Do tell. Anyone hurt?
I haven't seen that yet. I just saw a recent note here just said some evacuation orders underway for Ketchikan, and I just can't imagine what it's like to be on a cruise ship here in Seattle right now. Okay, we're going north, but we might have to make a little diversion. Anybody up for a day in Hawaii? Oh, no, wait a minute. We just had a hurricane come through there over the weekend. It's just strange time.
It's 36 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. Again, 24 minutes to 8. A very interesting lawsuit filed against a prominent university for not keeping Jewish students safe has resulted in a federal court judge imposing an injunction on that school. This is very interesting. Here's what's going on. Jewish students on the campus of UCLA, that's University of California, Los Angeles, were actually preventing from accessing parts of the university campus because they were Jewish. Federal District Court Judge Mark Scarzi opened his ruling in which he agreed to impose an injunction on the school with the following remarks. In the year 2024, in the United States of America, in the state of California, in the city of Los Angeles, Jewish students were excluded from portions of the UCLA campus because they refused to denounce their faith. Let that one sink in. Again, this is the judge's opinion here. This fact is so unimaginable and so abhorrent to our constitutional guarantee of religious freedom that it bears repeating. Jewish students were excluded from portions of the UCLA campus because they refused to denounce their faith. UCLA, the judge went on to write, UCLA does not dispute this. Instead, UCLA claims that it has no responsibility to protect the religious freedom of its Jewish students on campus because the exclusion was engineered by third-party protesters. But under constitutional principles, UCLA may not allow services to some students when UCLA knows that other students are excluded on religious grounds, regardless of who engineered the exclusion. Under the court's injunction, UCLA retains flexibility to administer the university. Specifically, the injunction does not mandate any specific policies they must put in place, nor does it dictate any specific acts that they have to undertake in response to the protests, but it does require that if any part of UCLA's programs, activities, and campus areas become unavailable to certain Jewish students, UCLA must stop providing those programs to anyone. So basically what he's telling UCLA is get rid of the anti-Semites or close down. So this is a big deal. And what do you know? The head of the University of California University System has announced that there should be an immediate ban on any further political encampments. See, what this I love how this judge, again, his name is Mark Scarsi, S-C-A-R-S-I, Mark Scarsi. He's a Trump appointee to the federal bench. What he said is, if you're not allowing these students access to certain campus programs or certain services or allow them to go to certain places on your campus, then you don't allow anyone. No one goes. If you're allowing discrimination on the basis of religion, then no one goes. And by the way, this blows out of the water this ridiculous ongoing fiction that, oh, if you're anti-Zionist, that doesn't make you anti-Semitic. Because a Zionist is someone who believes in the right of Israel to a homeland, to its nation, which is located exactly where it has been for quite literally millennia, going back 3,500 years. And what the left is trying to argue is you can be against the state of Israel and not be anti-Jewish. And yet these Jewish students were denied access to certain areas on campus unless they agreed to denounce not Benjamin Netanyahu, not the war against Hamas, unless they denounce their faith. You'll notice that some of the vandalism that we have seen right here in the Seattle area is vandalism at synagogues. Synagogues are places of worship. So they're going after where people practice their faith. They're not, well, I was going to say they're not vandalizing the Jewish Federation offices in Seattle, but they're doing that too. But it goes to show, as far as the protesters are concerned, there's no difference between being Jewish and supporting Israel. And, you know, that was what that Danny Wesney column we talked about last week. That's what that was all about, that there was supposed to be a 3-tiered exhibition at the Wing Luke Museum, is named for the first Asian member of the Seattle City Council, died tragically in an airplane crash in the late 1960s. But the Wing Luke Museum was going to have a 3-tiered exposition on political bigotry and intolerance. 1/3 was going to be from the perspective of Black people, Black Americans, another from the perspective of Jewish Americans, another from the perspective of Japanese Americans. And, you know, going back in history, or Asian Americans, because there was bigotry toward both Chinese and Japanese people and Vietnamese as well. And the staff at the Wing Luke Museum, the woke staff, got upset that the Jews were allowed to make their case against anti-Semitism. And they didn't like the fact that they were saying, you know, attacking people for being Jewish because you don't like what the Israeli government is doing, what a country's government is doing, is bigotry. Just as attacking Japanese people because of what the during World War II, because of what the Japanese government was doing, that was bigotry. That was unfair. So the staff at Wing Luke, they didn't mind that. They didn't mind Asian people complaining about bigotry because of things that were out of their control. But they had no problem saying Jews should not be allowed to complain about how they are treated because people, quote, pro-Palestinians, close quote, meaning pro-Hamas, are attacking them. They should be allowed to complain about those things. So this is how dark it has gotten. And so we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. This federal judge just drew the line perfectly. And I think that you are going to, I love that he said, this fact is so unimaginable and so abhorrent to our constitutional guarantee of religious freedom that it bears repeating. Jewish students were excluded from portions of the UCLA campus because they refused to denounce their faith. The campus knew this was going on and they let it happen. Wow. That's the political left for you. This is all the political left. And again, they hate Jews because they expose the lie that is the left, which is that even if you come from a background where you have been mistreated, where you are treated as second-class citizen, you can still make it, particularly in this country. They don't like that. Jews are inconvenient. They're in the way. And they really don't like Israel for much the same reason. It is 48 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show. When we come back, oh boy, the EV, the electric vehicle movement, takes another hit. We'll tell you why, coming right up. If you have more than half a brain, you're listening to this show and enjoying it.
But not caught in the rain, ironically enough. The sun is shining.
Yeah, it's going to be another nice day. It's going to be a pretty good week. A little cool tomorrow, but then get into the high 70s and into the 80s. What do I tell you? Summer hits late here, even though it seems like autumn, you know, in some ways, the warm weather will persist. Okay. The e-vehicle, the electric vehicle movement takes another hit. The Ford Motor Company announcing that it is canceling plans to develop an all-electric three-row SUV. Reason? Quote, slowing consumer demand, close quote. People don't want them. They have spent billions. Actually, you folks have spent billions of dollars in tax incentives and direct subsidies to the Ford Motor Company to scale up EV production. Quote, overall, the federal government and the state of Michigan have collectively promised roughly $10 billion. $10 billion. That's $10,000 million. $10,000 million. $10 billion in taxpayer funds to support Ford's unprofitable EV plans. And the misnamed 2022 Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden-Harris administration's crowning climate achievement, sets aside billions for domestic EV and EV battery manufacturing. They have mandated that 32% of all vehicle sales in 2027 must be electric vehicles. They must be plug-in EVs. It's the end of 2020. It's nearing the end of 2024, and you're at about 9.5%. 9.5%. 91% of Americans don't want an EV. And you think you're going to make 32% of American vehicles or sales are going to be EV in 2 years? No, no, not even close.
Something fun to share, John, with this nice weather, hopefully a clear sky tonight with all that's going on with the International Space Station and the two astronauts. It's due to fly over Seattle. It did this morning at about 4:01 a.m. in the east. It looks like tomorrow morning about 4:01 in the morning, they're saying, for about 3 minutes again in the east, about 60 degrees above the surface of the Earth, if we have a clear sky.
The space station?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been flying over Seattle since Thursday.
And if you listen real carefully, you listen real carefully, when it flies overhead, you'll hear a thin, tinny voice say, "Get me off this space station!"
Yeah, that's a challenge for him, too.
They're going to be there for a while.
Boeing employees tell the New York Post the situation is humiliating, with one saying, "It's shameful. I'm embarrassed. I'm horrified." Boeing saying in a statement, "The company continues to focus first and foremost on the safety of the crew and spacecraft." The astronauts' families now reacting to the news that their loved ones won't be returning home for another 6 months. Suni Williams' husband, referring to space, said it's her happy place. While Butch Wilmore's family tells Good Morning America they're praying for a safe return on whatever spacecraft that may be.
And I guess they're going to be hitching a ride with Elon Musk and his SpaceX spacecraft.
8 days to 8 months. Wow. You know, and people say, well, millions of miles in space. They are only about 251 miles above us here. That's what distance from here to maybe Ritzville. I mean, they're really close. And then I looked here for the living accommodations on this International Space Station. They say it's equivalent to a 3-bedroom home and 2-bath. So you got a little bit of room.
Oh, all right.
They do get TV service, but they're only allowed to watch TV pre-sleeping. No TV on while working.
They can actually get a TV signal up there?
Yeah. Apparently NASA says send some files. And with all the satellites, John, all flying around them, too. They have internet service, but they said that's very, very slow.
Well, one would think a couple hundred miles above
the Earth or so. Anyway.
Well, I don't know, man. It's like if you're looking outside your window, it's like, oh, hey, there's the Comcast satellite right there.
Right.
I can see it.
And there's Netflix.
There it goes.
Oh, wait, we got the Yellowstone Marathon this weekend.
Right. Hold the remote in the direction of the satellite and see if we can get some coverage here.
Got to move those rabbit ears. Make sure the tinfoil is tight on the tips there.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
We opened up the show. Talking about after we were off the air on Friday, Bobby Kennedy Jr. Endorsing Donald Trump. Now, it would have been unthinkable, and it has been unthinkable in the last 60 years that a prominent member of the Kennedy family would ever endorse a Republican. Remember, the Kennedy family is as close as we got to American royalty. And, of course, they all stayed, hewn to the Democrat Party line. But those politics have been changing. And Bobby Kennedy shocked a lot of people when he dropped plans for his independent race to continue and instead joined forces on Friday afternoon with Donald Trump.
He's a very low-key person, but he's highly respected. He is a great person. I've known him for so long. For the past 16 months, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Bobby Kennedy takes the stage. The ovation goes on for, I don't know, like another minute or so. He just got tired of running that. And Bobby Kennedy makes the pitch for Donald Trump. Well, let's get out of that and go to this.
And don't you want a president who's going to protect America's freedoms? And who is going to protect us against totalitarianism.
All right. So, now the Kennedy family have disavowed. Five of his sisters have disavowed his endorsement. And other members of the Kennedy family are, the cousins and such are cheering them on. They released a statement on Saturday saying, and it's a short statement, I can read it to you here. We want an America filled with hope and bound together by a shared vision of a brighter future, a future defined by individual freedom, economic promise, and national pride. We believe in Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Our brother Bobby's decision to endorse Trump today is a betrayal of the values that our father and our family hold most dear. It is a sad ending to a sad story. So says Kathleen Kennedy Townsend and Courtney and Carrie and Chris and Rory Kennedy. They are, again, the siblings of Bobby Kennedy Jr. Okay, a couple of things here. You can make a much stronger case that those five siblings have betrayed the values of Bobby and John Kennedy more than Bobby Jr. has. See, that's the sad part of this is people forget John F. Kennedy. You hear about Camelot, you hear about glamour, you hear about, the torch has been passed to a new generation of leadership and all that. But John F. Kennedy was not a liberal. He was a cautious liberal on civil rights, but back then that meant colorblind equality. He was a staunch anti-communist. His own brother, Ted Kennedy, was not. Jack Kennedy Well, you know, you know what he did with the Cuban Missile Crisis and how he basically pushed back against the Soviet Union after they were pushing him around, thinking that he could be a pushover. Well, he wasn't. So he loved astronauts. He loved, you know, freedom fighters. Basically, he was kind of a masculine guy. He did not like union corruption. He and Bobby both went after the Teamsters. It was the Kennedys who went after the Teamsters back in the 50s. And he was also a capitalist. Okay, here is what he said in 1962. This is John F. Kennedy. It is a paradoxical truth that tax rates are too high and tax rates are too low. And the soundest way to raise the revenues in the long run is to cut the tax rates now. Ladies and gentlemen, we call that supply side economics today. Back then, the tax rate was 90%, 90%. And Jack Kennedy brought it down to 70%. About 20 years later, Ronald Reagan brought it down to 50%. And before his term of office was out, he brought those rates down even further to the high 20s. Also got rid, by the way, of a lot of exemptions and deferrals. So let me ask you, whatever happened to JFK Democrats? Whatever happened to, frankly, let's bring it home local. What happened to Scoop Jackson Democrats? Scoop Jackson, the most legendary political figure in our state's history, is a very pro-union, but also pro-business, particularly Boeing. He used to be referred to as the senator from Boeing and was a staunch anti-communist. What happened to those Democrats like those guys? They're all gone. There is no Kennedy-Jackson wing of the Democratic Party. There isn't even a feather, let alone a wing. And Bobby Kennedy Jr. earlier this year was asked about tax policy, and he said, "I learned from my uncle," that would be Jack, "that cutting taxes increases prosperity. Liberals have never learned that. They still don't believe it." So that's what you need to know about that. Now, okay, Bobby Kennedy Jr. has endorsed Donald Trump. At one point, Bobby Kennedy Jr. was getting up to 15% in a three-way race. That's respectable. And much of that was because people could not stomach Joe Biden. How do we know that? Because when Joe Biden dropped out of the race or was escorted out of the race, Bobby Kennedy's numbers went from like 13, 14, 15% down to 4 or 5%. So there's still a Bobby Kennedy coalition. But Bobby Kennedy said, "You know what? I no longer recognize today's Democrat Party. It's nowhere like my family." And the family members who are saying that he's betrayed their vision, they're the ones who betrayed the vision. They've become ultra wealthy liberal elites. Okay, the kind of elites who preside over college campuses that are running Jews off campus, that have become woke machines, that have become entirely politicized. They sit back and let it all happen. Tell me, when's the last time you saw any member of the Kennedy family push back on the political left other than Bobby Kennedy Jr.? And I'm not talking liberals. I'm talking the left, which, by the way, despised Jack Kennedy. It hasn't happened. So is this going to change the race? Well, the answer is maybe. Let's be very cautious and very conservative. He's down to about 4 to 5% of the polls. Some of the people who are going to vote for Bobby just aren't going to vote. Of the remaining number who are going to vote, some will go to Kamala Harris, and more of them would have gone to Harris if Bobby Kennedy had simply dropped out of the race and remained neutral. But because he's supporting Trump, I'm guessing that maybe 1%. Donald Trump has increased his percentage of the overall vote by 1%, maybe 1.5%. And you're thinking, well, that's not going to make much difference. Well, it is in a state that went to the Democrats in 2020 by 11,000 votes, like Arizona, or 12,000 votes, like Georgia, or Michigan, or Wisconsin, that were slightly higher, but they're slightly bigger states, much bigger states too, 20, 25,000 votes. It can make a difference in pushing these swing states into Trump territory. That's why the Democrats are furious about this. I don't really care what the Kennedy family members say. They don't have much sway. They don't have much of an audience. They don't have much influence. In fact, one of the younger Kennedys who had a safe seat in Congress decided that he was going to run for the Senate in Massachusetts, and he just flat out lost to an aging mediocrity named Ed Markey. So the Kennedy Elan isn't what it was. The Kennedy magic hasn't really worked in a long time. They were living off the fumes of, frankly, Jack and Bobby, and to a lesser extent, Uncle Ted. And last observation I can't help but making since we're talking about, you'll notice that the Kennedy family rallied around Ted Kennedy when he drove a car off a bridge and drowned Mary Jo Kopechne in July of 1969, 55 years ago. But when his nephew, Bobby Kennedy Jr., endorses Donald Trump, well, then it's time to go public and break ranks and criticize him, angrily criticize him. How dare you? That's going too far. You know, rallying around Uncle Ted. Yeah, an office worker's drowned. Okay, it happens, even though it usually doesn't. We'll rally around Ted, but when a brother or cousin endorses Trump, well, then we need to go public right away. Anyway, it is coming up.
John, his voice, real quick, too, and you were asking, his voice, Bobby Kennedy Jr. Yeah. Okay, so nothing about talking too much in life or whatever. It's like a neurological order here.
I actually have something. I was going to do that in the next segment, but since we're here, we'll do it now. I found a bit on USA Today, and actually Robert F. Kennedy has a rare disorder called spasmodic dysphonia, a spasm of the vocal muscles. Kennedy is one of an estimated 50,000 people in North America with SD, and is often referred to a neurological condition that creates a vocal tremble in mostly middle-aged people that usually lasts for the rest of their lives. There is no cure, but treatments can temporarily reduce symptoms. So that's why
Botox, I've heard. But it's you have it for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt when he's talking. It just sounds like
It's just raspy and halting. And
No, it sounds like someone whose vocal cords were damaged, say, by smoke inhalation.
Yeah, yeah.
Singing a lot.
Or
broadcasters.
But it's good to finally find out what that is. Thank you, Big Mike. It is 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Speaking of Big Mike, his big segment of the day, social media from socialists on the John Carlson Show. Good morning. Well, it's coming up on 8:27 in the morning. Man, the time has just flown here. This first day of the work week on the commute with Carlson. Big Mike doing a stellar job filling in for the once again fleeing the premises, Philip J. Vandervoort III. We're told he won't be back until, what, Thursday or Friday?
He'll be back on Friday. He got me till Thursday.
Nice.
Yeah,
because
he's
doing an excellent job filling in Big Mike so far, including your first social media from socialists segment of the week.
Absolutely. Our favorite segment of the day, the Twitter 20. I heard it on the X, the social media sweep, sponsored by our friends at Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And I was watching some of the Sunday shows over the weekend, and I had Bernie Sanders on my mind. I haven't looked at Bernie Sanders' Twitter account for quite some time, so I thought I'd see, well, what is old Bernie up to? And the first thing I was stricken by is, I've seen this with other socialist adjacent politicians, like Ilhan Omar has this as well. But like, John, have you noticed that a lot of these politicians have two Twitter accounts? Like, I'm looking at the official Bernie Sanders accounts, like at Bernie Sanders, U.S. Senator for Vermont, but then also Senator Bernie Sanders at Sen Sanders. And for my going through this here, I can't really see that there's really too much of a difference. Usually it's like, you know, maybe like a personal account versus like a professional account, but he kind of tweets about the same stuff. So I'm going to give you a tale of two accounts here. Yesterday on the Senator Sanders account, Bernie Sanders tweets, millions of seniors in this country are going hungry today. 4 out of 5 seniors who need a home delivered or congregate meal do not receive one. We must increase funding for the Older Americans Act, reduce malnutrition, and meet the urgent needs of our nation's seniors. Now, contrast that with what he posts on his at Bernie Sanders account at around the same time. It's like he's jockeying back and forth between accounts, I suppose. He posts, having private health insurance doesn't mean a damn thing if you have a $7,000 deductible that you can't afford. So I just find like the messaging in like those two different tweets to be kind of awkward, to say the least.
Well, here, let me give you another example of head scratching Bernie.
On immigration, when Harris ran for the Democratic nomination against you and others, and
this is Jonathan Carl asking him about illegal immigration
in 2020. She said she favored decriminalizing illegal border crossing. She even suggested she would be in favor of abolishing ICE. Now, of course, she's taking, at least rhetorically, a much tougher line on border security.
So what do you think, Bernie?
What do you make of her transformation on this issue?
Well, I don't think it's a question of transformation. We have a crisis at the border. We've got to make sure the fentanyl does not get into this country. We have to crack down on illegal immigration.
Well,
welcome to the party, pal.
It's amazing what a liberal Democrat, including a self-described socialist, will say when they are desperate to cling to power. And that's Bernie Sanders. We need to crack down on illegal immigration. It's coming up on 8:30, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 25 minutes to 9 o'clock. Danny Westneat, Seattle Times columnist. I've known Danny, goodness sakes, I think for 30 years. And he's carved out a very impressive career as a Seattle Times columnist. And in many ways, I think typifies the average Seattle resident. He's a liberal who's increasingly impatient with the left, but not to the point of speaking out like Bill Maher has on his show. Every once in a while he will. He did last week. But he's, you know, not religious, and he writes about that and, you know, votes Democrat. But again, just kind of observes sometimes when they go too far and kind of rolls his eyes. He has a very interesting piece this week. He said, "I never thought I'd see it. There is now a group less popular in Washington state than atheists." He says, "As a non-religious person, I'm used to finishing dead last in the poll." And said, "So when a longtime reader sent me a recent survey of Washington state, his note got my attention." He says, "Look, there's a group below atheists in this poll. The poll was taken by DHM Research. They did a wide-ranging survey of 500 Washington voters about Washington state, the economy, other issues. And in one section, they ask people to rank their reactions to various groups on what they call a feeling thermometer. Like if you give that group a zero, it means you feel as cold and negative as possible. While if you give them a rank of 100, it means they couldn't get better. So the groups that ranked highest on the scale were rural Washingtonians, country folk. And the second was, you'll be pleased to know, police officers. In the middle were groups like environmentalists, immigrants, religious people, and Democrat. Lower down on the list are transgender people, gun owners, and then right near the bottom, atheists. But last on the list, Republicans. Quote, "It's the only group that ranks below the midpoint," meaning everyone else was above 50 degrees between 0 and 100. Only the Republicans got below 50. Atheists were 5 degrees warmer than Republicans. And Danny goes on to say, "Republicans, take it from me, if you're below the atheists, you're having a major brand perception crisis." Said Republicans were perceived relatively poorly across the board by women and men, by rich and poor, by young and old. Republicans did best in eastern Washington, but worst in King County, where 37% gave them the coldest ranking. Again, that's King County. Said the reasons for this were not explored. And Danny comes down. He says it's really because of Trump. It's because of Donald Trump. Here is what caught my attention. The highest ranked groups were rural Washingtonians and police officers. So why is that ironic in a poll that ranks Republicans last? Well, it's because rural Washingtonians are the strongest Republican voters. So people in Washington State are asked, you know, what groups of people do you have the fondest feelings about? And number one are rural Washington residents. But those folks are far more likely to vote Republican than Democrat. They're as likely in the country to vote for Republicans as King County residents are to vote for Democrats. And the second group here is police officers. Well, who do you think most cops vote for? Let me give you a hint. It ain't the party that stayed silent when Antifa were throwing rocks and chunks of concrete at them when they were trying to keep the peace during the George Floyd riots in 2020. They aren't the people who aren't the political party that called for the police to be defunded. They aren't the party that made it illegal for the police to chase bad guys almost all of the time. Police officers are not likely to embrace the party that wants to shut down both the King County Jail and the Juvenile Justice Jail, which is what Dow Constantine still says he wants to do. Police officers tend to vote for conservatives, people more reality-based, who look at issues not through ideology, but what's right in front of them. So that irony caught me. But then there's this. If these people love cops and they love rural Washingtonians, why don't they like Republicans? And I think one of the reasons for that is that, and this is usually where Republicans say, we need to make a better case for ourselves. Actually, you know what Republicans really need to start doing? Making a case that everything that has gone wrong in this state, drugs, homelessness, crime, slumping test scores in the schools, less safety on public transit and in school, all of this is the fault of one party. Everything I just mentioned to you, the policies that have created these catastrophic results, came in party line votes. Only one party is responsible for the non-judgmental approach to hard drugs that has killed many thousands of people through overdose, or has taken the light touch approach to homelessness, or has taken an even lighter touch approach to crime, not even prosecuting entire swaths of criminal activity, that has allowed woke ideology to be laced throughout the school curriculums, and has so abandoned its emphasis on the basics that people have started abandoning the public schools, even though they are now receiving record funding. That's just one party doing that, that voted to make natural gas, to institute a phased-in ban on natural gas, that you would not be able to choose that as the pro-choice party doesn't want you to be able to choose natural gas, that clobbered you with a 43-cent a gallon gas tax called the Climate Commitment Act so it could generate money that they could send to politically connected green groups and do, by the way, nothing to heal the planet or cool the planet. Again, climate change was the excuse, not the reason, for the Climate Commitment Act. One party is responsible for all this mess. One party did this. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think the average citizen knows this? Or do they say, when you talk to people about these, those politicians, Olympia. Because people are not pleased in Washington State. I've seen other polls that show right track, wrong track. People firmly believe Washington is on the wrong track. For the reasons that I just mentioned, they think we're on the wrong track. One party is responsible for the policies that created those results. Do you think that message is getting through? Because the message, who's threatening abortion rights in America? Oh, the Republicans. They have an immediate answer for that. Even though Republicans are not threatening abortion rights in Washington State, it doesn't matter if a Republican or Democrat is elected governor. It doesn't matter if you have a Republican or Democrat legislature. Washington's abortion rights law, which was set by initiative, updated actually, and set by initiative in 1991, was set by the people. It's not going anywhere. But the Democrats keep hammering on that, so the message has gotten through to the larger population. The Republicans are not making the case for who's responsible for why things are going wrong. What, were you expecting the media to do that for you? No. Most of them are on the sides of the Democrats. The Republicans need to do a better job, not so much of making the case for themselves. They need to make the case for who's messed things up. It's 48 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson Show. Talk radio 570 KVI. Good morning. All right. I got to play this Jon Stewart video. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show went away, tried to do other things, didn't work out so well. He's back to doing The Daily Show. And usually he's very predictably, very reliably pushing a liberal or even left-wing narrative. But he decided to get a little snarky about the Democratic National Convention. And here's what he told his live audience. They loved it.
They had a guy yelling, "Screw the billionaires."
That was Bernie Sanders.
Followed immediately by a very happy billionaire.
J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune.
It's all okay if it's our billionaire. Making fun of people for going to Yale and a bunch of people who went to Yale. The Democrats.
That was the Democrats criticizing. Some of their speakers actually criticized J.D. Vance for getting to Yale while there were about 8 or 9 speakers at the convention who went to Yale.
And people who prosecuted sexual predators and...
It just showed a picture of Bill Clinton. So Kamala Harris, I cracked down on sexual predators, and then a picture of Bill Clinton. Anyway, that is all the time we have today. It's going to be a nice, gorgeous, sunny day. You don't want to miss Mark Lee, Van Cameron, Robbins, Lars Larson, and of course my good buddy Ari Hoffman. Get out there and enjoy the sunshine.